Roger Franklin Williams, Talking Old School, was recorded to air at this time.
Guys, welcome to Talking Old School with Roger Franklin Williams, presented by Chris Nurse Prime Steak and Lobster, and by Gatorland, alligator capital of the world in Orlando, Florida. Guys, it's always great to be with you, but it's especially great to be with you as on our very first show of a brand new year. We're glad you're here. Thank you for joining us as we start 2026. Have a great show with a great guest. We'll tell you more about him in just a moment. But first of all, for our new listeners, and it's great to have new listeners joining us as we begin a brand new year, Talking Old School is where you'll hear in-depth interviews with Hall of Famers and legends from back in the day, as well as consistent, credible coverage of high school sports, as well and commentary on contemporary sports from a perspective that honors the old school values of hard work, teamwork, and respect for the game, and those old school off-the-field values of God, family, country. Talking Old School with Roger Franklin Williams is a sports talk show that respects our American flag and national anthem and the principles and values they represent. We support and defend free speech, and we support women athletes who do not want to compete against men in sanctioned events. Not woke, not cool. Proud to be old school. Guys, speaking of old school, before we go to our guests, of course, I want to remind you that Talking Old School is presented by Chris Nurse Prime Steak and Lobster and by Gatorland, the alligator capital of the world. Check out Gatorland's Screaming Gator Zipline. It's 90 minutes of award-winning fun and a fun way to start a brand new year. You can find out more at Gatorland.com. And speaking of old school and the bowl season and really very interesting, to say the least, college football landscape and scenario right now, we're going to talk Sugar Bowl. We're going to talk college football playoffs and the bowl season. But we're going to do it from a talking old school perspective. Of course, the Sugar Bowl was played Thursday night. Very interesting game. We'll talk a bit more about that. But in our keeping with our talking old school tradition, we're going to talk about the Sugar Bowl as well. But we're going to go back into the archives and talk about one of the great Sugar Bowls that was ever played. Surely, well known as one of the great college football games ever played. It was one of those classic game of the century matchups where Alabama, who was ranked number one by the AP, took on Notre Dame. And we're going to talk right now. We're going to be pleased to be joined by regular contributor Talking Old School, Frank Pomerico. Frank Pomerico was the starting left guard for the Irish in that game. And he is also, of course, the author of the book Era's Knights, Coach Ira Parseghian and the Golden Era of Notre Dame Football. Of course, the game was won by Notre Dame in dramatic fashion, 24-23, a game that changed hands six times during the course of the game. And as I said before, it's still acknowledged as one of the all-time great college football games ever played, and it resulted in Notre Dame being proclaimed national champion of the 1973 season. Let's go to Frank Pomerico. Frank, thanks for joining us, and it's always great to catch up with you.
Roger, great to be with you. It's an exciting time of the year when we have all these bowl games going on, especially last night with that tremendous Sugar Bowl. It was very exciting, and I was happy for Ole Miss, especially when they were kind of playing a little bit handicapped with a new head coach. I mean, he wasn't a new coach for the team, but he was a new head coach. And the way he kept those players together was tremendous. So my hat goes off to Ole Miss and a great effort they played last night in winning that game against a very good Georgia team.
You know, and Frank, as I was watching the game, I couldn't help but think of you and also reminisce. I still remember vividly watching the game that you were a big part of as a starter for the Irish, that 24-23 victory over Coach Paul Bear Bryant's Alabama Crimson Tide. They entered the game ranked number one. And then, of course, you guys emerged ranked number one with the national championship after that incredible game. And I'm happy to have you here to share a little bit about about it with us. In fact, why don't we start, and maybe you can take us back to New Year's Eve 1973 and one of those classic battles, game of the century battles.
Well, I tell you, it was a tremendous game. And to some people, especially some of the committee members of the Sugar Bowl, told me that was the greatest game that the Sugar Bowl ever had. Well, maybe they were trying to be nice to me, I don't know, but it certainly was a great game. And it was a game that was played in Old Tulane Stadium. Now, if you've ever been to Old Tulane Stadium, it's no longer there, but it looked like an old battleship. I mean, it was iron posts all through the stadium. It was kind of reminds you of an old battleship, but there was 85,000 people there. And that day, it had rained most of the day, and they had AstroTurf. So we weren't worried about the footing as much as we were worried about, you know, what the weather was going to be like. And by the time the game started, the weather had eased off, and it stopped raining, which was, it seemed like it was a gift from heaven that the game would be played under good conditions. Another interesting tidbit that not many people know is that Puma was sponsoring our shoes in those years. And we had these beautiful gold shoes to match our uniforms with a blue stripe on the side. And they were regular turf shoes. But when we got out on the field, we found out that a lot of guys were slipping with them. And so when we came back in, we touched base with Tulane's equipment manager, and they provided us with shoes that could hold much better on the field, which is just a little bit of a tidbit of information. But to this day, I still have those gold shoes, never worn in a game, but I have them, and it's kind of a reminder of that game. So it was a fun thing. Sugar Bowl was – I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, now for, you know, our younger listeners, and you know, can you kind of reset the scenario as well? Because one of the things that made the game a classic, and you know, a lot of times games that are hyped as a potential classic, you know, never turn out to be that way when the game's actually played. But this one certainly was. But going into the game, everybody had very high expectations, just as a spectator wise, because you had two of the, you know, historic programs, Notre Dame versus Alabama. Two legendary coaches, legends in their own time, Coach Paul Bear Bryant for Alabama, Coach Parsegian for Notre Dame. Both teams had really powerful offenses, both averaging over 350 yards a game. Of course, Alabama was in the wishbone at that time and just dominating people. Both teams had great, great players, great All-Americans, future NFL stars. Richard Todd for Alabama and a whole host of others. Woodrow Lowe, the guy you were assigned to block. You guys had Dave Casper, who went on for NFL Hall of Fame career with the Oakland Raiders, and many other great players. Tom Clements, the quarterback. So can you just kind of set the stage for us?
Well, I tell you, they were loaded on defense. They had a tremendous defense. We were averaging a little bit over 450 yards per game. 350 on the ground, and about just a little bit over 100 passing-wise. In those days, the passing game wasn't quite like it is today. But we also wanted to control what was going on the field and the clock. And when you can run the ball, you have a tendency to make sure you're going to do what you want to do. And the other team can't score if you have the ball. So that was the scenario. We had gone undefeated that year, but the story starts really the January before. January 1st of 1973, we played Nebraska in the Orange Bowl, and we got demolished 40-6. And from the ashes of that defeat rose a great champion. And the champion wasn't that we were going to kill everybody. The champion was that we wanted to prove that we weren't that bad. Nebraska had a tremendous team with Johnny Rogers and John Dutton. I mean, they were loaded on offense and in defense, too. That was the best 8-3 team I had ever seen. They had won a national championship in 71 the year before. So they destroyed us in 1973, January 1st, after the 72 season. So that whole offseason, our thinking was we want to prove they weren't that bad. And then we start in the season and we start building 44-0 against Northwestern, 20-7 against Purdue. Then we're up against USC, and they're right up the top of the rankings. And we beat them 23-14 in a classic game. And it was out South Bend. It was dark. It was dreary. It was kind of raining. And we were able to beat them. They had an awesome team defensively. They had Richard Wood, Artemis Parker, Jeter at defensive tackle. I mean, they were loaded. Charles Anthony, another linebacker. And on offense, they had Lynn Swan. They had J.J. McKay. And they had Pat Hayden. They had Anthony Davis at halfback. Tremendous offensive line. So we were able to beat them. And then we realized, hey, we really have something going on here. We get to the Air Force game, which is the last home game of the year. And really, I think one of the last times Notre Dame Stadium wasn't sold out. And the reason for it, it was over Thanksgiving weekend, and they sent the students went home. So there was only, I don't know, two or 3,000 that didn't show up. But it was a good game. We won 48-15. The next week we beat Miami 44-0. And now we have the stage set for the Alabama game. But what happened is there was a couple of teams before us. There was Ohio State, and there was Michigan that were ranked ahead of us. And the night before that game that Michigan and Ohio State played, which was a Saturday, we had played on Thanksgiving Day. Ara had a meeting Friday night, and he said, okay, let's all pray for a tie tomorrow. Because if they tie, that makes our game with Alabama for the national championship. And sure enough, they tied 10-10 in Michigan and Ohio State, and we're playing for the national championship. And it was the North against the South. It was Ara against the Bear. It was the Catholics against the Baptist kind of thing. And it was a tremendous setup for this game. They were tremendous on offense, as you mentioned. They could run the ball with two complete different backfields. They had a guy named Jeff Rutledge, who was a quarterback, with his own set of backs. And then Richard Todd would come in with a whole other set of backs. And they could run like crazy. Although we had a pretty good defense, too, and we held them to 317 yards total offense, which is pretty good against a team like Alabama. But it all comes down to a pass at the end of the game. It is third and about three. And Ara calls a tackle trap pass. And what happens is Tommy Clemens says, we're going to go on a long count. So Dave Casper.
But yeah, and you guys were backed up inside your own five, too, at the time. Or inside your own ten. Your 10, yep.
Yeah, we're inside the 10, and now it's third and three, and they go offside. We think they go offside, but who went offside was Dave Casper. It was the thing he told us not to do. He says, okay, guys, hold on the count. I said, I'm going to stick in my spot before I go offside, because I was always worried about doing that. But Dave Casper went offside, and he had played brilliantly all game. He made tremendous catches. He knocked down two guys on one block for Eric Penix to score. It was a tremendous performance by Dave Casper, who goes on and becomes an All-Pro and then a Hall of Famer in the NFL and Hall of Famer in college football. He was the best athlete on our team. He was a great lineman, could play any position on the line better than anybody else. And he can also play wide receiver. He ran a 4.6 40 at 6'3", 245 pounds. So he does go upsides, and we're all clapping that Alabama did. We find out it's us. Now it's third and eight from our three. And Ara called the same play, and the pass play was supposed to go to Dave Casper, but they had three guys on him. So Tommy Clements, as cool as the other side of the pillow, lofts a perfect spiral to our other tight end named Robin Weber, who caught one pass all year. and he goes for 30 yards and a first down, and we proceed to run out the clock. But the hitting in that game was tremendous. We weren't saving anything for the next week. We were letting it all hang out on both sides. And when the end of the game, it was almost sad that somebody had to lose. We had such respect for Alabama. They were a clean team, and they played very hard. I remember a very interesting thing that happened after the game, this mayhem going on. And then I hear one of my teammates say, "Hey, look who's here." And I look over, and there's Bear Bryant. He had come into our locker room to congratulate Eric Parsegian, and then said, "Where is that Tommy Clements?" So he goes over to Tommy Clements, and he goes to him, "Tommy, you're one heck of a football player." And with that, Tommy had won the MVP of the game. And believe it or not, last night he was recognized as a Sugar Bowl Hall of Famer, which was long overdue, but they didn't want to do anything until he had retired from the NFL because there was always conflict with playoffs and stuff. But Tommy was well-deserved to get that honor, and we were all very happy that he did and very happy that he was at Notre Dame with us at that time.
Absolutely. Thank you for sharing. And, yes, Tom Clements pulled off one of the outstanding, most amazing, most impactful plays in Sugar Bowl history with that pass to Robin Weber. What a fantastic story. And, yeah, I remember watching that play vividly. It was one of those games you couldn't even leave your seat. You didn't even want to blink because you would miss something because, as you'd mentioned earlier, the lead changed hands six times during the game.
Yeah.
And, and of course, Coach Bear Bryant with his, philosophy of field position, and he had you guys kind of exactly right where he wanted you. Really, I'd seen Alabama win multiple games over the years by having a team in that exact situation. If you get the stop on defense, they have to punt from deep in their own territory. You get the ball somewhere around on their side of the field, and you're set up perfectly to score at the end of the game, or at least get a field goal. And things look totally advantageous for Alabama at that moment. And what an incredibly gutsy call by Coach Parsegian. And I will say, if you look at the replays, and I remember watching this at the time, and you helped to explain it because I didn't realize, watching the game, you wouldn't realize that the play was supposed to go to Dave Casper. But, Robin Weber was not wide open by any means. I mean, if you watch the replay, you got basically three Alabama guys kind of standing pretty near him, and Clemens just dropped that ball in perfectly, and of course, he had to make the catch. And as a guy, he'd only caught one ball all year.
Yeah. We ran the same play for a two-point conversion. What had happened is we had missed an extra point as well. But what Ara did is he had Pete Demmerle was our All-American receiver, and they put him at wideout, but he was playing in tight for this two-point conversion. And then he slipped out into the back of the end zone, and he caught the pass for 2 points. Not many people know that was the same play, the tackle trap pass, that Robin Weber caught. And what happened is Ara wanted to really make sure that they thought we were going to run the ball. So he put in two tight ends. Demmerle comes out, and Robin Weber comes in. And again, he didn't catch any passes all year. So with that, he catches this pass. He kind of bobbles it a little bit and runs out of bounds right near Bear Bryant. And I'm sure he was fuming at the time because, he knew that we were going to run out the ball at that time, run out the clock, and it was such an exciting time. It almost seemed like when you were running through it as a player, you're saying to yourself, "I can't believe I'm actually here in this game, playing in this for these kind of stakes, the national championship." And every play, you're trying your best to do as well as you can. And if you don't, you say, "Forget it," because usually sometimes it would wear on you. Just get back in there and try again. One of the things I want to bring out about that game that's really interesting is I had ripped my ankle up in the first scrimmage of the year, missed the first four games. We had a backup guard named Tom Bolger, who was maybe the best athlete of all the linemen. He could play basketball. He could play golf. He was a really good weightlifter. He was fast. He was a baseball player. And he filled in for his first three games for me, and we didn't skip a beat. And on the fourth game, we were down in Houston, and he rips his knee up in a play against Rice. My roommate at the time was Dan Morin. He fills in for him. The next week, I come back against Army, and then I'm ready for Southern Cal. But Dan, I asked him, I said, Dan, you take the specialty teams. And with that, on that Alabama game, there was a 93-yard kickoff return right up the middle, and the key block was made by Dan Morin. And believe me, he could move a lot better than I could have at that time because my ankle was not 100%, but I wasn't going to miss this game at all. And Dan stayed on his block, knocked his guy down, and Al Hunter goes 93 yards for a touchdown. Not many people know that. When I introduce Dan, I say, this is the guy who won the Sugar Bowl for us 52 years ago. And he, of course, gets all fans up strong and excited and proud that he was, people remember who he was. So it was a good thing.
Thank you for sharing that historical account. Guys, we're speaking with Frank Pomerico, regular contributor to Talking Old School. Of course, Frank Pomerico, author of the book, Era's Knights, Coach Ira Parseghian and the Golden Era of Notre Dame Football. Of course, he was also a three-year starter for the Irish from 1971 to 73 and was tri-captain of the 1973 Notre Dame Fighting Irish National Champions. And he's talking about that historic number one versus number two Sugar Bowl from New Year's Eve 1973, from which Notre Dame emerged as national champion in the AP poll after a stirring 24-23 victory over Coach Paul Bear Bryant's Alabama Crimson Tide. I do want to say for historical record, and this is a kind of also shows a contrast between today and back in the day. You know, that was, you know, there was no playoff back in those days. There was no BS, even BCS type of playoff or top two or two. It was just, it just kind of fortuitously wound up that, that number one, number two just wound up playing each other in the Sugar Bowl. And also, the point I want to make is that back in those days, even the UPI actually proclaimed national champions before the bowl games. So, but Alabama actually had one national championship in their pocket because they had already been proclaimed national champion by UPI. Of course, AP, and they had only started doing this a few years before, waited until after the bowl games. And of course, Notre Dame was awarded the national championship for beating Alabama in the AP poll after the Sugar Bowl. But anyway, just mention that just for historical record, and also because it shows the tremendous contrast between today and then and the evolution of college football. Well, Frank, and guys, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue to speak about with Frank Pomerico. And when we come back, I'm going to talk about more about his book, Era's Knights, Coach Ira Parseghian and the Golden Era of Notre Dame Football, and the legacy of Coach Ira Parseghian. Guys, you're listening to Talking Old School, presented by Christner's Prime Steak and Lobster and by Gatorland, the alligator capital of the world in Orlando, Florida. And we'll be right back. I'll go back. Guys, welcome back to Talking Old School. It's great to be with you as we begin a brand new year. We're glad you're here. I want to thank you for the opportunity to join you on the first program of 2026. We've got a great guest, regular contributor to Talking Old School, Frank Pomerico, author of the book, Era's Knights, Coach Ira Parseghian and the Golden Era of Notre Dame Football. Of course, he was a three-year starter for the Fighting Irish from 1971 to 73, and he was tri-captain of the 1973 Notre Dame Fighting Irish National Champions. I'll go back to Frank in just a moment. Of course, I want to remind you, Talking Old School is presented by Christner's Prime Steak and Lobster and by Gatorland, the alligator capital of the world in Orlando, Florida. Check out the Florida Resident Special at Gatorland. You can save half off admission through the end of this month. Visit Gatorland.com for more information. And of course, I want to let you know, as you already know, but remind you that Christner's is where you'll find generous servings of prime beef and cold water Australian lobster served in an atmosphere of old school elegance and sophistication. Begin your new year by treating yourself with a wonderful evening at Christner's. Let's go back to Frank Pomerico. You know, and Frank, and this is an Eris Nights is just an absolutely fascinating book. I encourage all you guys to read it. It's just, it really gives a lot of great insight into the culture of Notre Dame football back during the 60s and 70s. And also great information about Coach Eric Parseghian and his coaching philosophy, and you really are able to glean why he had the success that he did as coach at Notre Dame, which included two national championships. And one thing I do want to point out as well is that Notre Dame had really fallen on hard times in terms of football before Coach Parseghian took over as head coach in 1964. In fact, Notre Dame had had a series of either 500 level seasons or even losing seasons over a period of several years before Coach Eric Parseghian revived the program. So anyway, his tenure and his impact was truly an important part of the success of Notre Dame football. But let's go back to Frank Pomerico. And if Frank, can you talk a little bit about what it was like to play for Coach Eric Parseghian and specifically the goals and values that he had and that he wanted to instill upon you guys?
Well, I think when you look at Eric as a person, he was somebody that Notre Dame wanted to be known for. When it comes down to it, it's about people. It's not about the place itself. Notre Dame wants to be known for certain characteristics and values, and that's a good thing. A lot of the kids that go to Notre Dame have those values. Maybe they're not brought out as much as it can be, but the thing that Ara did was he was interested in class, character, integrity. These are the values that he had. And Notre Dame wanted to be known for those things, but he was an example of what those things could be like in person. And how he looked at the team, he was looking for people that had faith, and not necessarily a religious faith, but a faith of spirit, a faith of goodness, a face of kindness that were going to make a difference in other people's lives. These are the values that Eric had. He was also interested in family. Anybody he recruited, he wouldn't be ashamed of bringing to his house and having dinner with his family. He wanted people that had respect and manners for each other. And these were the good things that Eric brought to the table. He also worked us very hard, so we had pride about who we were. Now, he wasn't really your friend. He was more like your mentor and somebody that had expectations for you and somebody you wanted to be like, because he was such a great, classy guy, and he was loyal to his players. And when I say he was loyal, he was fair to them. And anytime you're fair to people, there's a tendency to be loyal to that person. And Ara was very fair. He would pull all his assistant coaches and even some of the captains at times to find out all he could about a subject. And then he would pull the trigger. He would be the one that makes the decision, for good or for bad, but it was a fair decision. And fairness is something that sometimes is lacking in today's world. So this is something that overrided a lot of different things, overrided money, prestige. If it was the fair thing, Ara was going to do it. And the last thing he was always worried about or was always trying to inspire was discipline. You know, you get up, you start your day right, you have a good breakfast, you clean up, you shave, you get ready for the world. And then you find out everything you possibly can about how to reach your goals. It could be studying extra for your exam so you're eligible. It could mean working out harder. It could be this driven spirit that everybody on that 73 team had in order to prove that they can exist in this college world. And we weren't that bad as the Nebraska game, the Orange Bowl, getting beat 46. And again, he mentioned once, through the ashes of this defeat will rise a champion. And then we did. We rose in champion. And we may not have been the most talented team Ara had, but we were maybe the most together. And when you put those things all together, you have a great formula for success.
Thank you for giving those great insights, guys. And again, the book is Ara's Knights, Coach Ara Parseghian and the Golden Era of Notre Dame Football. We're speaking with the author right now, Frank Pomerico. Of course, Frank Pomerico was a three-year starter at left guard for Coach Parseghian from 1971 to 73, and he was tri-captain of the Notre Dame 1973 National Champions. And he's also an alumni of St. Francis Prep in New York City. St. Francis Prep is also the alma mater of other esteemed alumni, including Joe Torre, Coach Vince Lombardi, and of course locally our friend Coach John Hemmer, Hall of Fame track coach at Oak Ridge High School. And now, can you pick up and elaborate? You did a great job of stating it, but this is one of the core, I guess, messages in the book, was the impact, the positive impact that Coach Ara Parseghian had on the lives of you guys, his players, after football was over. And the reason I'd like to have you address that even further is, I can't tell you how many times I talk to the great Hall of Famers and legends that we have on we're fortunate to have on Talking Old School, and a lot of this is off the air. They didn't have really a great experience. I mean, they may have had success on the field, and et cetera, but there were some really negative experiences, and some of the guys that some of the coaches that have great reputations externally weren't always such great people, or didn't have great wonderful culture, fair-minded cultures, if you will. So anyway, my point is, it's great and uplifting for me to hear you talk about just the values that Coach Parseghian had and how he lived them and how he was such a positive influence on you guys.
Well, I tell you, one of the things about Ara was that if you were ever around him, you became kind of one of his disciples. And when I say that, he was a standard, a level of greatness, so to speak. Maybe that's the wrong word, but he had such moral values and such competitiveness that you wanted to be like this guy. And anything that would get you closer to him or be able to spend more time around him was almost like trying to hold water in your hand. You know how it slips out when you're trying to take a drink? But that was time around this fella. You couldn't get enough. I talked to different coaches around the country. I remember talking to Bo Schembechler once, again, the head coach at the University of Michigan at the time. And I was a salesperson for Nautilus Machines. And I was introduced to Bo by the fella that used to have that territory. And he says, "Coach, this is Frank Pomerico, and he is going to be the new representative here for Nautilus. And he played at Notre Dame." Bo looked at me and he said, "Notre Dame? Why would you bring a Notre Dame guy to deal with us?" I said, "Coach, I did go to Notre Dame, but I played for Ara Parseghian." He looked at me and he said, "Son, you can say all you want." He became my biggest customer. I couldn't believe it. Here was the enemy of Notre Dame, and he was embracing me like I was one of his own guys. And he treated me, really, he knew me better than the other coaches at Notre Dame after Ara had left. So it was really kind of an emotional thing, an extension of Ara's family that had come back and I had crossed lines with. And he embraced me and became my biggest customer. Anytime he needed something, he would call me. I remember I brought my son to the University of Michigan for a camp. And my son was wanting to go to Notre Dame or a Big Ten school. But Notre Dame was really his dream because he grew up here in South Bend. Well, we didn't get a sniff from Notre Dame. I mean, Tom was about 6'4", about 235, 240 pounds. He was a tight end and a long snapper. So we're at camp, and I see Bo. I say, "Hi, Coach." He says, "Hey, what are you doing here?" I said, "Frank Pomerico." He said, "I know you are. You're Ara's guy." I said, "Yeah, that's right." I said, "My son's here at camp." He says, "Your son, what's his name?" I says, "His name is Tommy." He says, "Tommy, how you doing?" He's shaking his hand. He says, "Where are you going to go to school?" He says, "I don't know." He says, "Don't give me that stuff. You're going to Notre Dame. Your butt's coming right here to Michigan." And sure enough, my son gets offered to go to Michigan by Lloyd Carr, and he has a very successful career. Even though he wanted to go to Notre Dame, but he goes to Michigan, the 3-year starter, and he becomes this Distinguished Scholar Athlete Award from the Big Ten. It was a great choice for my son. He had a good career there, and now he's a college professor as well. He's a professor of art at Northern Arizona University, and he's doing well. But the thing I'm trying to say here is that the recognition, if you were around Ara Parseghian and you were part of his family, you can be part of my family too, because we know you have the values that are important in running a successful program. Lloyd Carr is another one who said to me, "Frank, you wouldn't believe when Ara was coming to a clinic to speak, everybody would rush to get in the front row." So they had their pad and pencil, and they wanted to make sure that they could get as much information from this man as possible, because things that came out of his mouth were like gold. They couldn't get enough of it, and they couldn't be around him enough. And Bo and Ara were very similar in how they treated their players, with respect and with loyalty, and worked them hard. I'd say Bo is maybe a little rougher around the edges than Ara, but that's all the difference. The difference in how they treated their players was very close and very good. And I think you have the same kind of loyalty to Bo Schembechler's people and Lloyd Carr's people as you do to Ara Parseghian and any of the coaches that were around him. Bill Mallory at Indiana is another fellow that was very similar to Ara as well. He had his Ara first captain at Miami of Ohio. So there was a lot of branching off. I'd like to talk about one story. When I was writing the book, I used to go to Michigan quite a bit. And there was a fella there, a defensive back coach. His name was Terrell Burton, a black fella that played for Ara at Miami. And I called him and I said, "Coach, my name is Frank Pomerico." He said, "Oh, yeah, I know who you are. You're the guy that hangs around in the Nautilus machines." I said, "Yeah." I said, "I'd like to talk to you about Ara Parseghian." He says, "Ara Parseghian? Why do you want to talk about him?" I says, "I played for him at Notre Dame." He says, "Oh, I didn't know that." He says, "I'll do anything for Ara Parseghian." I says, "Okay." He says, "I'd like to talk to you about when you played for him at Miami." He says, "Well, there's a lot of things that went on there you probably don't want to hear about." I said, no, I want to hear about everything." He says, "There was a lot of race stuff that went on in the 50s. I said, "No, that's what I want to hear about." And he told me the story that they were invited to a bowl game once. And the committee said, "Well, you'll stay at this hotel, but of course your black players will eat in this room and your white players." And Ara said, "What are you talking about?" He said, "We're a team. We do everything together." He says, "Not here, you're not." Ara says, "We ain't playing in this bowl game." And the AD backed them, and Miami didn't play in the bowl game. So it was a tremendous thing where Ara stood up for the race card. And he did something that was right instead of something that was, you know, in the news at the time. But Terrell Burton never forgot that. And he told me some other stories that were very important and good that Ara's decisions made. He was colorblind. He didn't care if you were red, yellow, white. If you were the better player, you were going to play. And that was something that we have taken on with us for the last 50 years. If somebody has character, it doesn't matter what color they are, you're going to be working with that person in a proper way. And if there's somebody that doesn't have character, it doesn't matter what color they are, you're not going to deal with that person. So just a few lessons from the way Ara was with us, and it was great. His disciples were great.
Yeah, Coach Ara Parseghian, a true man of integrity and a true class act. We're pleased to be speaking with one of his products, one of his players. Frank Pomerico is also the author of the book, Ara's Knights, Coach Ara Parseghian and the Golden Era of Notre Dame Football. We'll say one more thing as we wrap up, too, is that just to put things in further perspective, historical perspective, you know, of course, Notre Dame is well known for way back in the day for Coach Knute Rockne, and of course, followed by Coach Frank Leahy shortly thereafter, and just that kind of dominance that, that they had. But in about a 10-year period before Ira Parseghian took over as head coach in 1964, Notre Dame had really fallen on hard times, had a number of losing seasons, a number of just mediocre 5-5 seasons, and even were only 2-7 the year before Coach Ira Parseghian took over the program. And of course, he did a phenomenal job of resurrecting it, went 9-1 his very first season as head coach, but and then won two national championships on his 10 years that he was there. But not only, and I think the point that you make, Frank, with us today and also in the book Era's Knights is phenomenal, just historical on the field legacy, truly resurrecting Notre Dame football. But his impact was even much more greater because of the man that he was and the impact that he had on his players who went on and began to strive to live their lives by the values that he instilled in you guys.
Oh, for sure. You know, if you had to capsulize things that Era stood for, he cared about his players. He cared about even the trainers and the managers. He cared about, they were all part of his family, and that's the way he treated people. And a lot of times when we're out in the regular world and we're working with people, you have to treat them like they're part of your family as well. And this way, especially if you find out that they're fair to you and you know, it's not always that you got to win big and they're going to lose. You want everybody to feel good about interacting with them. And that's the way Era was. But he also challenged us. How good can you be? How great do you want to be? And he says, I'll coach you, but you got to show me that you're going to do it. It's inside of you. The greatness is inside of everybody. All they have to do is recognize it and pull it out of themselves, organize their thoughts, organize their efforts. And if they're doing that, you get the right coaching, and all of a sudden you're at the top of the heap, or you're scratching to get to the top of the heap, or you're competing to be in the top of the heap. And that's the main thing, that you're competing in life. And that's something that Era always wanted us to do. To give our best effort no matter what and never give up.
Thank you. Thank you, Frank Pomeruco, for sharing these great insights and for joining us once again on Talking Old School. Best wishes in the new year. Well, guys, we're going to go to another break, and we'll be right back on Talking Old School, so please stay with us.